Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, up coin sale pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, they be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fuck me promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, up coin sale pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, cause that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Boys that don't tolerate it, melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack upped up another conversation, Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
He was talking about the fact that we describe these issues a great deal. We talk about them and we analyze them, and we rarely get a chance to talk about solutions. Well, we've been working on solutions. We're going to talk about power not from the point of view of being victimized by it, but by developing it and using it against our enemies. At the last lecture I gave at the Slave Theater, where we were talking about global white supremacy, I initiated this theme on power by saying that we can explain the reasons Europeans victimize us in as many ways as we would like. We could talk about them as being ice people, as against the sun people, and that explanation is valid. Have no problems with it. We can talk about them in terms of their protecting their more recessive genes against our more dominant genes. We can even get into a little psychoanalysis and deal with the myth of length of penises and penis envy and all the other things, and black balls and white balls and brown balls and black holes and white balls rolling into black holes and things of this nature. And all that's fine. That's a lot of fun. But no matter how you explain why or how the European got to the point of victimizing us, I think the essential issue is that the European victimizes us because he can. Because he has the power to do so. And we are victimized because we haven't developed the power to prevent his doing so. So in a sense, no matter how we explain why he does what he does, at the end point, he does what he does because he can. And consequently then, I infer from this that we can end his victimization of us when we end his power to do so. And consequently, I want to bring into the domain of discussion in this community the subject matter of power. I want us, in addition to studying black history and culture, to study power, its accumulation, its use, and application. We should talk about it every day and everywhere. We should read about it, and we should develop the means of using it. We should come to understand the nature of how white power is organized. In the end, power does not flow from the genes of white folk. Does that not flow from their ice age? It flows from the nature of their organization and the way they have chosen to relate one to the others. And it flows from their intentionality as a people and their appropriate organization of themselves to realize their intentionality, one of which is, of course, the domination of African people. And that means then that we as African people must study the rules of organization. We must study the means of relating one to each other in such a way that we multiply our power. And we must study our enemy's organization such that we can probe that organization and destroy the power of the enemy. And we can do it. We have a tremendous amount of power in our hands. Right here in America, we are not a weak people by any stretch of the imagination. The only weakness is in our minds and in our imaginations. That's the only place. We are not a dependent people in the material sense, only in the psychological sense. The only thing, ladies and gentlemen, we must get over is our cowardice. That's the only thing. That's the only thing. We can change this. I will speak briefly then to the issue this evening relating to the message that Dr. Bragan brought you last week around this conference titled Genetic Factors in Crime, Findings, Uses, and Implications, which was to occur at the University of Maryland. I've warned you many times and I've told you many times, I don't know whether it gets through to you or not, but we as black people must get over this thing of looking at schools and universities as advanced vocational training institutions. How many people recall that I've repeated this time and time again? That the function of education is not jobs. That is not the primary function. Children and people are educated. The primary function for education is to advance the interests of a people and to protect their interests, to secure their survival. That the educational structures and institutions of this country are as much a part of its defense, of its armed forces, as are its soldiers. The bombs, the weaponry that this nation uses against other nations and intimidates other nations with, develop out of the universities. The germ warfare, the chemical warfare, political, because some great professor is the head of this particular department, or they have illustrious names in the department, chances are you will never see them teach you in a class. The graduate students on some kind of assistantship will more likely be your teacher. Where are the brains and where are the professors? They're doing research, and often they're doing research on government grants for the government, for the corporations, for the other institutions in the society, and they are part of then the total system of domination of this country. Afrocentric education above all, and even beyond the teaching of African history and African culture, is preparing our children to defend the very lives of African people. It is a military preparation and a preparation for war. It is the means by which we will maintain our biological survival as a people. For if you do not survive, what does it matter if you teach reading to 100% of our children, or they learn math well, or they learn computer science, or all the other things you think are important, when your very lives are in the balance, and it is very likely that they will be snuffed out in the next 10 to 20 years. And yet we still continue to look at schools and colleges and universities as vocational institutions. And here we have then at the University of Maryland, long connected with the U.S. Army, by the way, hosting a conference on so-called genetic factors in crime. Breckinridge that this meeting, which was canceled, was part of a broader program, a violence initiative, a federal government research agenda, so that this program was only a part of a larger agenda. And it was designed to move toward finding a genetic marker that would supposedly identify children at high risk of becoming criminals and to develop plans to deter them through medication. And this is interesting due to the fact that there's little or no real information that links directly in any kind of strong way or even in a mild way a relationship between genes and criminality. There's been no DNA segment that has been discovered that codes for crime. When you think about it, the idea is ludicrous anyway. What is crime? What is violence? What is violence? In other words, I'm asking this question because you have to do a linguistic analysis. There are all forms of what? Violence. There are many different types of what? Crime. Different types of aggression. Not all violence is necessarily bad. There's what we in psychology may call hostile aggression. But there is aggression or violence that may be used in terms of what? Self-defense. Violence may be used to protect your children from attack. Violence may be used to protect the lives of other people. So now if we're going to get a gene for violence, or a type of violence, or in removing regime for violence if we were to find it, which is an unlikely situation? Are we also removing a people's capacity to defend themselves and to use violence in their own interest? What I'm saying is then, be very careful when people use words like violence, aggression, crime, and so forth, and ask yourself, what kind of crime? You know, do we have a gene for every type of crime you can name? So that even when we change definitions of crime, a new gene comes into being that we're going to find related to that particular crime. And when we decide that certain other behavior is no longer a crime, will the gene which was coded for that crime disappear? Ludicrous. Ludicrous. I talk in Black on Black Violence about the structuration of crime. That crime follows the type of violence that we talk about, or crime, even its nature, follows the class structure and follows the skills levels of criminals. You see? Why is there so much so-called violent crime in certain segments of the society? Because when you look at the skills levels of the people committing them, if they were to commit a crime, that's about the only crime they could commit. If they were accountants, they would commit the crime of embezzlement and steal hundreds of thousands or millions because they have a particular ability or skill. And you'd be a fool if you were an accountant or in an S&L where you could steal millions of dollars and then make the public pay billions back and then hang out on the street and knock somebody out in the head. So here we have this crimogenic society that robs our people of skills and other means so that if they decide to participate in a crime, then the probability is that it will be violent by the very nature of the way the society has set them up in the beginning. In other words, the society even determines the type of crime you are most likely to commit itself. Okay? And then it tells you, you're violent. Teach me to be an accountant. I won't hit any more people in the head. I'll just rob them by books. Okay? And then they want to talk about white collar crime and, you know, in the other kind of collar crime. Come on. Wake up. This has nothing to do with genes. It has to do with the nature. I've also told you about reversal, right? I mentioned the fact that in order for us as a people to be in the situation that we're in, we literally have to be turned backwards. We have to think backwards, behave backwardly, deal with the world backwardly. It's necessary. It's the only way the system can maintain itself. Sometimes I say the best way to win an argument is to concede to your opponent. Okay. There is a genetic marker for crime. Let's now look at the criminal records of African peoples and European peoples. The record is clear. If there is a genetic marker for crime, would we look at the fact that the European has committed a crime against every people on every continent, destroyed millions of people, then that argues for his genetic criminality. And that argues then for us to medicate him and control him. You know, the other thing I'm surprised at is we keep being surprised. We keep thinking that this is some new initiative. I mean, the violence initiative began with our enslavement and continues today. We already have fought the violence initiative, ladies and gentlemen. It is already operating. We bought it when we bought learning disabilities. When we brought the concept of hyperactivity. When we brought the concept of impulsivity. When we brought the concept of special education. You're already in it. Connected to these so-called symptoms of learning disability are the very same symptoms they're going to try to connect to the so-called genetic markers. And our children are already being drugged. The violence initiative has already occurred because our youth are already going to jail in record numbers. So why are we talking about these people are initiating something to bring and put our youth in jail? They're already in jail. Those that are not already in jail are in juvenile detention, are under the aegis of the BCWs, you heard it tonight, in the special education program, already being drugged, already being therapized, already having their minds distorted in various ways. And the worst violence initiative program is the public educational system itself. So this so-called initiative that you're talking about tonight is a mopping up operation. That's all it is. If you're telling me in Washington, D.C. and other places, black youth and black people, 75% are in some form of contact with the criminal justice system already, some 60% in any given day in Baltimore and other areas already in contact with the criminal justice system? Well, then what will this new initiative do? Just make it what? 100%. We should have already been what? Upset. Why are we kicking and screaming now? We should have been screaming already. This initiative is an old trick in psychiatry and psychology. It's a trick that we call the medicalization of social problems. That is to define a social and political problem as a medical problem. And to put psychiatrists who are doctors, physicians with MDs in control of the definition of these problems, even though they are an arm of the state, as are social workers, as are psychologists, as are all of the other helping professionals, but members of the state and arms of the state. But we are so willing to submit to their authority, such that when they define social and political behavior and behavior which has social and political causes in medical terms, even the oppressed and the victimized consent to their mistreatment. Louis Sullivan is a part of this, but in a sense we are all a part of it, because we buy the medicalization of issues. And they know, since we are willing to do anything the doctor says, tells us to do, why are you taking that poison? The doctor said, take it every 2 hours. The doctor says. So now if the doctor says that your children have a marker, a genetic marker, then let's go with it. And we don't have time this evening, one of these days we'll talk about psychiatric power and the role of psychiatrists in the system. Oh, the history of psychiatrists is horrendous. You won't believe it. You won't believe the tortures that have been created in the name of psychiatry that are even being perpetrated today. You won't believe the robbing of civil liberties, the robbing of freedom and all other kinds of things, the complete destruction and taking away of people's constitutional rights, but in the name of psychiatry. When you medicalize a problem and define it in medical terms, the patient loses all rights. And therefore, you can resolve a lot of issues that, if they were defined politically or socially, would then become constitutional and legal issues. But as soon as they are put under the aegis of medicine, then you reduce to a very great extent the legal and constitutional implications. So what we have going here then is an attempt to move social and political problems into the area of psychiatry so that we, even as African people, can consent to social control and the killing of our people. One quick thing, and I know we're short here. Don't get caught up in this brain and biological basis of behavior. Okay? Don't be deceived because someone can say that they have found a biological correlate with behavior. That means it is genetic in nature, or that means it's congenital, or that means that the society has no responsibility for the behavior that the person is committing. Don't buy that baloney. People run that a lot. You know, as soon as we can locate some kind of brain deficiency and correlate it, then we're ready to say, oh, society is not responsible for it. Are you kidding? Learning and experience physically transforms the brain. Traumatic experiences and even positive experiences changes the biochemical nature of the brain, as well as the neuronal functional organization of the brain, and influences the number of dendrites and synapses and other things that cells use to communicate one with the other. Now, you must understand here then, and I could talk a great deal here about the experiments here that have shown very clearly that if you put certain animals through certain experiences, their brains actually can increase in weight. Let me give you a quick run of things that happens when some rats were placed in various environments. One group was placed in a so-called enriched environment. These rats being selected from the same genetic background, having the same genetic background and the same genetic inheritance. But they were put in under different environments. After they were put through, after they lived in these environments for a while, they were sacrificed and their brains looked at, weighed, measured, and analyzed. Now, those rats that were put in an enriched environment, let's look at some of the things that were found. They had an increased thickness of the cerebral cortex, or the gray matter. In other words, the thinking matter of their brain increased in thickness and weight. A 15% increase in the actual size of the neurons in the cortex. Increases in protein in the brain paralleling the increases in cortical weight, indicating that the growth effect was on tissue and not just on the fluid content of the brain. An increase in the amount of dendritic branching, dendrites are the hairy branching fibers which project in large numbers from the body of each neuron and which receive input from other neurons and conduct them to the cell bodies of other neurons. There was an increase in the branching of these neurons, and a greater amount of potential information was available to each neuron. An increased number of dendritic spikes per unit length of dendrite. Increases in the number of synapses and the sizes of the contacts between the synapses. An increase in the ratio between the weight of the cortex and the weight of the rest of the brain. A 15% increase in the number of glial cells, and on and on we go. What are we saying here then? That experience changes the brain, changes the nature and the functionality of the brain. So simply because you may find a brain correlate does not take society off the hook. It means then that if society controls the experience of a people, controls their experiences, it is manipulating their brain and controlling its size. And so they want to run a game on you with this biological substrate number. A quick reference here to some tentative research that was noted in the New York Times Wednesday, September 16th. And you should read this piece, and the research is tentative, but read the scientific journals. But there's something interesting here. The headline reads, "Behavior therapy can change how the brain functions," researchers say. Like drug therapy, behavior modification therapy produces metabolic, what do we mean there? Chemical enzymatic changes in the brain and functional changes. That is how different parts and areas of the brain relate one to the other in controlling a behavior and initiating a behavior. You know what I'm saying? Like drug therapy, behavior modification. This is a non-drug therapy, right? This is a therapy based on social relationships between the therapist and the client. Okay, and that's what we are comparing here. And what does it say here then? Both of these produces metabolic and functional changes in the brains of people with obsessive compulsive disorder. It is the first time that behavior therapy, remember we're talking about a basic social thing here, even though there's some other adjuncts to it, a method that changes the way people think, and I'm emphasizing think, about uncomfortable thoughts or feelings, the way they deal with uncomfortable thoughts and feelings, this therapy particularly relating to obsessive compulsive behavior where people are exhibiting certain attitudes toward compelling thoughts and behaviors. So this therapy, which seeks to change the way they think about these compulsive feelings and think about these thoughts and these urgings that keep telling them to do things, has been shown to physically alter brain function in a mental disorder. And we could go on, the piece was longer. I brought this up to get those who might think that we only talk about rats. What are we saying here then? That the very nature of human relations itself can change the functional nature of the brain. The idea being then that even when they come to you and tell you that there's some kind of correlation between a brain functionality and a particular behavior, don't fall for the okey-doke that necessarily means that the society is not responsible for producing that behavior. Society shapes the brain as it shapes other things as well. I'll move on quickly here. The theme of black-on-black violence, the book, is that the alleged criminality of black males will be used to justify the repression of the African-American community and quite possibly its genocidal annihilation. In other words, the running theme of the book, Black on Black Violence, is this, that the alleged criminality of African males will be used as a major rationale so that when this society decides that it will annihilate this community, the other members and nations and people in the world will buy it because they have been convinced that we are innately criminal. And what I'm trying to get across in there then is how this propaganda is developed. This is why, despite what you say from a logical point of view, despite the fact you may say this is not the majority of our youth who are in jail, the vast majority of you are not engaged in violent behavior. The majority of people on welfare are not black people. The majority of people in prisons are not black folk. You know, you can lay one fact after another, and yet what happens? The people still insist in seeing it as a black problem, don't they? When you lay evidence and facts before a people, even evidence and facts that they themselves have collected, and they still insist in seeing you in a particular way, then you must recognize that they are seeing you in that way because it is important to their own psychological state of being and because it serves their own interests. Yes. And you must ask the question then, why are they obsessed about projecting this kind of image? And you will see then that it is there to rationalize their behavior against you. They're not, and therefore, as I will say a little later on, this idea of arguing with these people point for point is not what the game is about. It's not what it's about. Let me quickly move on. We must, I want to lay a context, because often we discuss these issues out of context. And I've told you before, as I've told you in Black on Black Violence, that European sociology, psychology, and so forth decontextualizes issues, meaning that it discusses violence or crime as if they do not exist within a social context, as if they do not have a history, as if they do not serve a function in the society. So you're made to look directly at the behavior and the behavior only, and to judge it and treat it without looking at the context in which it occurs, and look at how the context itself may create the behavior. And even behavior therapy plays this game, by the way. Okay? You must start at the context first before you discuss these problems. What is the context? The context is this, that we are a dominated people. We are dominated by European people. Am I making myself clear?
Yes.
This is where we start. This is where you start. We are under the control of another people. We are vulnerable to that other people who are holding our lives and the quality of our lives in their hands. That's the fact you must start with. The second fact is, domination is a social problem. Am I clear here? Domination itself is a problem. It is a social problem, particularly for the dominated, isn't it? Even if it's for the dominator, it's still a social problem. Keep this in mind. Domination, therefore, generates the very existence of domination means that a social problem has been what? Generated. Huh? You can't have domination without having a what? Social problem. So domination generates a social problem, and as long as it exists, it maintains that social problem. As long as you're under the domination of Europeans, you will have social problems. There are some idiots among us who think that they can leave the European in control of African people and get justice and peace. It is not possible. Domination is built on injustice. And you cannot then leave the European in power over black people and then expect to be to receive justice. It's illogical. It's not possible. Domination benefits the dominator. We are dominated because it what? Benefits those who dominate us. Therefore, the dominator benefits from the social what? Problems. In other words, the problems of black people benefit white folks. And they are created for their benefit, and they are maintained for their benefit. And therefore, those who dominate us have an investment, monetarily and every other way, in perpetuating the symptoms of maladjustment in us as a people, and they engage in interactions that reinforce those problems. That's why no matter what kind of program they lay out for you, it does not resolve the social problems that they claim they're designed to resolve. And I'll be through in just a second or two here. The problems of the dominated provide evidence which justifies their domination and supports their own domination. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the major outcomes of power And one of the major benefits of being powerful is that you can generate the evidence to justify your power and to justify your domination. Why, when I go to prison, I see that 56% of you are in this prison. Therefore, we are justified in controlling you. But then we forget how what? They created the problem so that 56% could be in there. Now then, as the gentleman who wrote Blaming the Victim put forth, and I will say, first of all, this problem is created. Our problems are needed. This is what I'm arguing in Black on Black Violence, that this society needs the criminality of black males. It needs the fantasy that black males are criminals. It is necessary to the very structure and being of this society. It is very necessary to the self-definition of Europeans. It is very necessary to maintaining their domination and advancing their domination. Therefore, they must create these problems, or they must even imagine that these problems exist where they truly do not exist. Therefore, they create the problem, and then, as Ryan argues, first they identify the social problem, second they study those affected by the problem and discover in what ways they are different from the rest of us, this great underclass. How are they different from the rest of us? And you know now, arguing black on black, that the so-called criminals in the jails are not any different from any of the rest of us. You are not going to find a criminal personality. You know, and yet that's been the golden grail of psychology. You know, how can we distinguish these people from the rest of us? We're all in this game together. Third, they define the differences as the causes of the social problem. In other words, we create the problem. Then we go in and look at the people who have the problem and see how they're different from those who don't. And then we say, oh, their differences is the reason why they have the problem. You see, so they're going to create these brain dysfunctions, then go in and find the brain dysfunction, and then say the brain dysfunction is the cause of the problem. Now let's medicate. So they define, they use the differences, and finally they assign a government bureaucrat to invent a humanitarian action program to correct the differences. I asked my class the other night, what if we could find a 100% sure shot rehabilitation program? A program that would rehabilitate 100% of the clients. Would that solve your problem? No, because what would happen? The others would keep what? Rolling in. Rolling in. So rehabilitating the ones who have the problem does not solve what? The original what? Cause of the problem. And again, we have people who enter into the wrong point of the equation. Let me get here then and say, these controversies such as the one we are dealing with now, they speak to the need for domination to justify and maintain itself. Howard Zinn stated, the establishment, whatever rewards it gives us, will also, if necessary, to maintain its control, kill us. Hear that, black bourgeoisie. A part of your being promoted in American society is to maintain control of the black community. The day that your death is necessary also to maintain control and to maintain white power, they will kill you as well. And I want you to keep this in mind then, and I want you to fall into the trap of discussing this particular issue. We fall into a trap by concentrating on the scientific and methodological details. You know, well, there's no genes. When you find it, forget all that nonsense. And get caught up in personalities. Well, Goodwin is an evil guy. You know, Louis Sullivan is a... Screw all of that. It's the same kind of thing you have with Columbus. If Columbus had not discovered America, some other European would have. Even if you could step back into history and kill Columbus, you're still in the same shape you are right now. Because what is the essential problem here? Columbus didn't build the ships. Columbus didn't build the technology. It was European technology, political and economic organization that made it possible for Columbus to come over here. And it was European technology, organization, intentionality that made it possible for them to overrun the Indian nations. What you have here then were two different cultures and two different technologies and two different ways of thinking facing each other, and one ran over the other. Not Columbus. I want you to get out of the personality issue and deal with the deep issue. You are facing a society and a culture. You are facing an organization that will put man after man after man in front of you, but it will still run its same program. You must learn to cripple the organization, not the person. This is an old argument. It's the same kind of old game that went on with the genetic basis of intelligence. This is the same old game refried. What do we have here? Let's look at the deeper issue. And the deeper issue involves the need to justify domination, social control, and to obscure the very real way deficiencies are created by power relations. Quick question here. Why are whites obsessively concerned with the intelligence of black folks? This is the thing you must ask first before you get into whether it's environment or gene. Ask the major question. Why are you interested? What's the point? Huh? Why is it so what? Important for you to know. What are you going to do with the knowledge? This is the issue. What would be the result if it was definitely and irrefutably established that blacks are innately less intelligent than whites? Let's ask that question. Let's ask another one. Are we found irrefutably that we were more intelligent than whites? What would be the results? Are just as intelligent as whites? Or that environment is really significantly influential in determining intelligence? What would be the result if we discovered either one of these things? What would be the result if we proved that blacks were genetically more docile than white folk? The end result would what? Be the same. Would be the same. Nothing is going to change. Why? The findings, whatever their nature, will be used to justify and rationalize the social control of black people by white people. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, if they proved that we were innately less intelligent than they would justify domination, wouldn't it? Yeah. We are more intelligent, therefore we have a right to rule over you. But then if you proved to them in your great work that you were more intelligent than they are, well, these people are more intelligent than we are. We should suppress them while we can, because if we let them loose, they will take over. So the repression would still take place, and it would still be argued. Well, they are as intelligent as we are, and that means one day they may compete with us, so let's still what? Repress them. Oh, you mean the environment is truly significant in intelligence. So what would the result be then? Let us control what? The environment to control their intelligence. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, the final come down of it all, no matter how you refute these people, no matter how much detail you roll out one way or the other, they will always be used to do what? Justify repression and oppression. That is the issue, not making fine pointed arguments as to whether IQ tests are culturally based or genetically based or this so-called initiative here. It's pointless. What we have going here is an attempt by people who are dominating us to create new rules and means by which they justify their domination and repression. That's all that's going on here. Screw whatever excuse they rolled up in time. The only thing that has changed by any so-called new initiative, such as the one we're talking about today, is the logic of justification for continuing domination and the methodology of domination. That's the only thing that's changed. Nothing's changed by this new initiative. All they said, well, their violence is a medical problem, and therefore, now the methodology for that is to do what? Cut their brains out and medicate them and so forth. But the end result is still what? Domination and control. Thus, the central issue revolves around power and domination and maintaining the relative powerlessness of black people and finding rationales for doing so. For a very sizable percentage of black problems flow from the nature of black and white power relations. These problems that we are dealing with flow from our powerlessness, from the power differential between blacks and white folk. They reflect the differences in power between us as people. Nothing else. No brain issues here. The issue then for the black community is this: how to break white power and the will of whites and any other ethnic group to dominate and exploit African people. And I'm telling you, any other ethnic group, because whites are not the only ones who are moving in place to dominate African people. And the issue then is this, and you must keep this in mind. This must be our agenda. This is our agenda, to break the power of people to control our lives. This is the agenda. An agenda set by us, not by others. Our program for change and empowerment, for enhancing the education of our children, for maximizing our quality of life, should continue regardless of academic and social debates regarding the social or genetic bases of criminality, intelligence, and so forth. What am I saying? We must keep focused on changing the nature of power in this world. Regardless of the debates about what is going on. If you get caught up in the details, you're going to lose the focus. One other thing, and I'm through. We got some people out here looking for conspiracies. I want to note this because I see a lot of this going on, and there's people on the circus getting over on the conspiracy number. And there are others, you know. Let me just warn you about one thing, black people. You must think in terms of a nation. You must think of yourself as a nation. It's very important that you think of yourself as a nation. Many of the issues that you see confronting you can become very clear if you think of yourself as a nation surrounded by other nations. I tell people, I haven't written a second book on the cause of violence, the economic cause of violence, but there is an economic cause. I talked about the psychodynamics in black on black, but there's another part of the story, which is the economics. Quickly, it's like this, ladies and gentlemen. If you saw black people in the United States as a nation, you would recognize that to a very great extent, the social disorganization that we complain about, the breakdown of families and institutions, the criminality of our children and so forth, is the result of the fact that as a nation, black people are suffering from a negative trade imbalance, from a trade imbalance. In other words, black people have an overwhelming national debt. What do we mean by that? It means that more of your money, earnings, income are flowing out than what? Are flowing in. You jumped for equal opportunity and you educated your most talented people and you sent them away from you and sent them to work for other people, and the monies they earn, you told them to live among those other people so they contribute their brains and skills to your enemies and spend their monies among your enemies and enhance their power, and now they become neoconservatives and join the attack on the African community. You understand what I'm saying? Anytime a nation buys more than it sells, Anytime that a nation ships its wealth out in great bundles, anytime the nation lets other alien groups, Arabs, Koreans, and others, and whites, come into its midst and take its money out, and then let the drug dealers scrape up the rest and take that money out, their institutions are going to collapse on their heads. Your families are breaking up because they do not have the economic floor that they need to keep them there. Your children are going wild because you don't have the money to give them the appropriate education and recreation and other kind of things you need. You cannot build the institutions that you need to maintain the viability of your society because you're giving it to everyone else. And you're shipping it out. And therefore you suffer from it. Now, with this view in mind, what does this mean? You can solve this problem to a very great extent if you think of yourself as a nation, remove the aliens from your midst, and thrust out into the world, and earn wealth and money, and bring it back to your nation, and watch its prosperity increase, and watch the people become more civil with one another, build the kind of institutions to create the kind of schools you want. But until you do that, it's not going to happen. This is the program. Conspiracy, then. There are people out here looking for the mad scientist who made the AIDS gene. And now they're looking at Goodwin. Is he? Oh, he's the mad man that's getting ready to run the nuts sort of thing. And there are others who are in the government huddling around. Screw all that. Stop wasting your time hunting for the smoking gun. When you are a nation, you recognize one thing. When you discover the conspiracy, it's too late. Yeah, it's too late. When you discover it, it's too late. If you are a nation, you know what you act on as a nation? You act on capability of your enemy. They can be your friends, as a matter of fact. They can have good relationships with you. But the moment they develop the capacity to destroy you, you don't worry about whether they hate you or love you or they're conspiring against you. You recognize that they have the capacity to destroy you should they want to. You don't search for the conspirators. You search for a way to defend yourself against one, should it occur. It's the fact that whites have the capacity to use AIDS that should move us to build a defense. That they have the capacity to destroy African nations that should move us to build a military. That they have the capacity to destroy our people in economic warfare. Not whether they are thinking of doing so or whether there's some person who's doing so. Screw that. Don't put the energy in what? Building a defense and an offense on the fact that they are capable of doing so. All right? It's necessary. So, ladies and gentlemen, our eyes, we should do what? Keep the agenda on changing the power relationship, empowering ourselves so that we can defend ourselves regardless of the type of conspiracies any groups have against us. So what does it mean, ladies and gentlemen? Keeping our eyes on the prize. And that prize is power. Power to the people. Thank you very much. The idea that to see involves more than just opening the eyes and exposing the retina to the environment. It means then, in a sense, the mind sees through the eyes and directs the eyes is what to see. We are... In hypnosis, we deal with something that we call sometimes negative hallucinations. That is, getting people, let's look at the other type of hallucination first, say the positive hallucination. The positive hallucination, of course, is getting people to see what is actually not there. To see things that are actually not present in reality. And of course, some of you probably have seen those kinds of hypnotic tricks, where you tell the hypnotic patient or the client that he has a rabbit in his lap, and of course there's nothing there, and he then proceeds to pet it and play with it, even though it's not there. This is what we call a positive hallucination. You can also produce a negative hallucination. You can tell the hypnotized subject that an object which is right before his face is not there, and he will see everything except that particular object that you've directed him not to see. You see this sometimes in certain forms of schizophrenia, for instance. Some types of schizophrenics can look and see everything on this podium here, except to have this tape, even though it's right there before their eyes. Sometimes it's fascinating when you look at people who are so-called mentally disturbed, particularly the schizophrenic, because you can see the enormous powers of the human mind. And in this instance, then, you have a mind that for some reason or other is instructing that patient not to see a particular object right before his face, and yet he's seeing all of the other objects around it very, very clearly. So what we are trying to talk about here then is that if your mind and your brain is inefficiently programmed, then that inefficient program will misdirect your eyes, will misdirect your senses, will create for you then a reality that is, in a sense, unreal. It will mean then, since you are missing reality and missing parts of that reality, you cannot efficiently cope with it. To a good extent then, when we look at the history of the African man in relationship to the European, we see a man whose reality has been created for him, whose mind and brain has been created in such a way that even the most obvious things in reality are overlooked and not seen. And this is often done through what we call this so-called education. Remember, I alluded to the idea of trained eyes, experienced eyes, which means in an individual's mind has been created so that the eyes can find what that individual is looking for. What makes you think then that the European who trains your mind is going to train your mind to see reality in such a way that it will overthrow his dominance over you as a people? How do you expect to see reality from a people who writes your history in such a way that you don't even see yourself there? So when you look at history, you're not there. You look at American history, you're not there. You look at world history, you're not there. You look at anthropology, you're not there. And if you are there, you're there as a primitive, Stone Age kind of people, never having written anything or contributed anything. You look at economics, and you're not there except perhaps as a commodity in and of itself. You look at mathematics, and you're not there. You look at every discipline, and you do not see yourself. What kind of reality, then, can we be looking at as a people when our minds have been trained in such a way that we have literally negative hallucinations as well as positive hallucinations? It's amazing then that when we look at these disciplines where we don't see ourselves, so many of us call this kind of education in these disciplines a good education. It's an amazing kind of thing. You've had a people who have hung you, lynched you, degraded you, enslaved you, killed Indians, colonized people all over the world, killed millions and millions and millions of people, exploited people, destroyed people, polluted the earth, have they done such a job on the earth until you begin to wonder if they come from the same planet. You begin to wonder if these people are not a type of infection, a virus whose purpose it is to destroy the health of the world itself. And as we see them now beginning to destroy the earth and now getting ready to move their destructive natures into the cosmos itself, they've already made it to the moon and are now preparing to infect the whole of the universe. How can you then, as a people, assume that the people who've done all of these kinds of things to us as a people can give us a vision of reality? How can we accept their description of reality as the one with which we are going to guide our own behavior? How can we believe a people whose very lives depends upon our continuing domination? And yet there are those among us who seem to want to believe this, who seem to want to push their children under the instructorship of these people, who seem to want their people to resemble these people in some fashion, who have the nerve to see these people as representing some kind of civilization. These people may represent a culture, but not a civilization, particularly if we're going to look at the word civil in the sense that it is normally used. We saw this thing here, in fact, last week I remarked, somebody had a conference here somewhere, and they voted against, or they condemned, what do we call it? Terrorism. In fact, I saw Reagan, someone proposed that the meeting between Reagan and Gorbachev would involve a discussion of terrorism. And I found that so amusing. In fact, I find the newspapers and the TV, particularly the news, very, very amusing. And they're real jokes to watch. And in a way, you're looking at these guys and they're going to talk about terrorism. And yet, here are the world's two greatest terrorists sitting in conference. Two people in the world who have the world wondering, when is the end going to come? When is one of them going to go off and drop a bomb that is going to destroy the life of man and perhaps life on earth, period? The very fact that they are seen as powerful people, the very fact that the world sat in intense attention when they met, is symbolic of the fact that they are holding the world in a state of terror. And that we are frightened that they may, for some reason or other, let loose the great power that they have under their hands. And yet they have nerve enough to talk about terrorism as if it belongs to another people. And yet these are the people many of us want to claim that we want our children to be just like. These are the people we want our children to share a piece of the pie with. And yet these are the peoples whose very weapons are weapons of death These are the people who represent death in the world. One of the things I recognized when I went through the graduate schools, and that struck me again and again and again, and that was this idea that these people are dead. They're not alive. And dead people are deadly. What kind of civilization can it be when the more civilized you become, the more deadly you become? How can you justify that as civilization? We as a people then have to recognize that there must be an alternative to this kind of being. That the idea of our people is not to share equality with these people. Because the system that they represent is one that in and of itself should be rejected. What kind of education, and the brother wonders sometimes why I don't want to be called doctor, or don't want to be called this and that. In a sense, I think if we think about it very closely, we should be very hesitant about giving ourselves those titles that are conferred upon us by these other people and what they so-called represent. Because we have to recognize that the educated individual is the craziest of all individuals. That the educated individual is the most dangerous of all individuals. When this world comes to its end, it will not be brought to an end by the muggers on the streets, ladies and gentlemen. It will not be brought to an end by the drug addicts, by the street prostitutes, by the youth gangs. It's going to be brought to an end by people with PhD degrees. It's going to be brought to an end by people who studied physics and mathematics, who spent 15 and 20 and 30 years in school. It's going to be brought to an end by people who live in nice clipped lawns with houses on the corner, with neat hedges, two-car garages, nice little well-spoken children, the people who send their kids to private school. And one morning, they'll go off to work and give their wives a nice little bourgeois kiss. And then they'll go down and sit in front of the console of their computer and proceed to blow themselves up along with the rest of the world. What kind of education is it that leads to these kind of people, ladies and gentlemen? These people are being educated into madness. A real Afrocentric education would not educate people in such a way that they then develop tools of death and destruction, that they become the endpoint of a destructive procedure. When you must recognize then that these very people you bow and dip to and defer to, these very so-called experts, are the people who are going to take you directly to hell. Because you are responding to them not in terms of truth, not in terms of what they're really saying, but in terms of their symbols of authority. And because they lay these symbols of authority on you, they can tell you any kind of nonsense, and you're ready to believe it. And because they threaten you and intimidate you with their degrees and with their so-called learning, you're not willing to follow your own common sense and question what they have to say and where they're going and what they're doing. And you don't have sense enough then to say, wait a minute, if you were so well educated, if you were so liberal, if you were so perceptive, if you were so concerned, why are you making weapons of death that will destroy you, your children, and the futures of mankind? Why are you then living in the laps of luxury, having far more wealth and money than you could ever use, while millions and millions of my people are starving and dying the world over? So we must recognize then that these kind of people cannot lay a correct perception of reality upon us as a people. And we must recognize that the very educated among them are the very ones who are responsible to a great degree for creating the distorted reality we face today. We have to recognize that knowledge in and of itself does not represent the salvation of mankind. You saw this in the book of Genesis, didn't you? Where Adam and Eve were told to stay away from the tree of knowledge. And the old devil there was telling them, watch, eat of it. You should be as gods.
He's
just telling you that. If you get a hold of this fruit, you'll be able to know good and evil, and you'll see right and wrong. You can see just as good as God sees, and in a sense, you will become God yourself. And they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. And from this point on, we see that knowledge was not the salvation of man. And you can see it today in the Caucasian, who believes that the more knowledge he gets, the more somehow he's going to be able to be godlike. He thinks that if he gets to know more about DNA, he's going to be able to create life, and perhaps he will to a degree. But have you also noticed that the more knowledge he's gotten, the more of a danger he's become to the world? And that the more he's gotten to know about the atoms and the so-called foundations of the world, the more he has also gotten to know about how to create death and destruction. So consequently, he is in a race with himself, thinking that knowledge will save him, when all it does in most instances is push him closer and closer to the end of his life on earth. And so the Russians feel as if they knew a little more about the United States, a little more than the United States, then they would be able to defend themselves against the warlike nature of this country. And therefore they learn a little more and build a more dangerous weapon. And the United States then feels that it knows a little more than the Russians know. He will defend itself against their weapon. And they move a little closer to death and destruction. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it is a people who have been educated in terms of knowledge, but not in terms of the spirit. Not in terms of the heart, and not in terms of the soul. It is a knowledge that is dead and materialistic.
Not be deceived by this kind of thing, ladies and gentlemen. It is quite possible. Even if you don't think it's possible, you have to prepare for the what if. I've often mentioned to people about the Martin Luther King dream, you know, and he lays out the dream. It's a beautiful dream, I've remarked. But then that dream is also based on an if. You know, if they will love us, if they will accept us. And there are a lot of propositional statements in there. You know, if the economy is good and all of these kinds of things, then little black boys and white boys and girls, and they hold hands together. But we recognize that this is a propositional statement that's being made here. But you also have to ask the other question, what if it doesn't work this way? You see? What if the dream does not come true? Another problem we have often, we believe in the American mythology of progress. We as blacks have bought that idea. We bought this idea because America has advanced to some degree over time, and many of us have automatically assumed that things have got to get better. That's sort of the American way of thinking it. You know, we got it today, it's got to be better tomorrow. There's no law that guarantees you in any way that things have got to get better, ladies and gentlemen. There's no universal rule that says life has to get better, that says race relationships have to get better, simply because you were in slavery some years ago and now you have a so-called relative degree of freedom, the idea then that you can never go back into slavery, or the idea that you can never re-experience reconstruction and the other kinds of things, to think that this is not going to occur. There is no law in the universe that tells you that that this cannot be the case. There's also this belief in the invulnerability of the white man, and the belief that somehow he's going to always protect his interests and be able to advance his interests, and therefore, as long as we hang in with this guy and protecting himself, coincidentally, he'll protect us. There is no law and rule in the universe that says the white man is going to rule forever. As a matter of fact, if you look at history, it's going to be very clear that the civilizations built by the white man shall perish as the others have perished. So even in the good times, a wise people prepare for bad possibilities. Even if we were to hold hands with little white boys and white girls, and you know, that was all this great Martin Luther King dream, that still does not say that we should not prepare for the other possibilities, because they can't occur. Recognize that all of these dreams are often based on, very much based on economic systems. And when economic changes come about, these dreams turn into nightmares. And recognize, let's look at an example here. Look at New York City and the problem we're having with education in New York City. This problem we're having, particularly in terms of African Americans, is very much connected with the economic situation in New York City. Ask yourself the question, what if we educated 100% of black and Hispanic children in New York City? They read well, they could pass all the civil service exams and the whole bit. But what would happen if the economy of New York City did not expand to accommodate all of these great graduates and plus the other people who are also graduating at the same time? You see, we assume simply because we keep getting more degrees that there will be automatically more jobs out there. But that is not necessarily the case. You can educate a vast number of black and Hispanic children. You still have not solved the problem that there may not be a market out there to absorb these kids when they get out there. And you will see then some more furious confrontations taking place of a prepared group of people and educated group of people who now cannot find jobs. And if you think the other people are unwise and unhip to this, you got another thought coming. So consequently, it becomes wiser for them to pretend that we're having tremendous problems in education, where you chop off over 50 or 60 or 70% of black and Hispanic children early in school, and you can say they don't work because they're not educated, and therefore everybody gets off the hook. But you can see the miseducation of these children is in part related also to the economic structure. It means that the economic structure has to expand at the same time you increase the number of graduates from secondary and from collegiate institutions. If the economy does not expand, the dreams of Martin Luther King will not come true, because the economy cannot finance these dreams. And these dreams have to be financed by something. And so we have to recognize then what is going on in reality here. You have to ask yourself then, in so many years of education, to what degree are we as people and African people in a position to really protect our biological interests? And ladies and gentlemen, I believe that the biological interests of black people, the biological survival of black people, is in question. I'm not talking about quality of life. I'm talking about life itself. As I've often said, when we look at this situation, the military situation, the situation of pollution and so forth, what African nation, if the Caucasians decided tomorrow that they wanted to re-enslave African people, what African nation or group of people could militarily defend the interests of black people? With the kind of space weaponry we have floating around in the atmosphere, what African nation could defend the militarily its own people other people in the world. In what way has all of the college education and the degrees in engineering and so forth we have gotten advanced our ability to defend ourselves militarily and in other ways? Let me look though quickly at something else, and let's try to context education in terms of this. I often talk about what I call constants. A child reaches a major milestone in its development when it can recognize constancies in the world. That is, when it recognizes how the world stays basically and essentially the same in many important areas, even though it appears to be changing. And even though in terms of its sense organs, it is changing. If you were to look at the images of this room on my retina or cornea, the room certainly would not have its rectangular shape, because it would actually be shaped very oddly. This door passes, I move, each time I move, the door would change shapes. Even though perceptively, as far as I see it, it still stays the same. But actually in terms of the image that's projected on my retina, it is constantly changing with every movement I make. And not only is it changing relative to me, but its shape is changing. And if I were to go on just what is thrust on my retina, I would have to lean sideways or all kinds of ways trying to get through this door. But what happens is my brain corrects the image that is projected on my retina. And it maintains a constant image of this door despite the myriad of changes that may be projected on the retina of my eye. So it permits me then, despite where I stand in this room, how I move, to move very efficiently through that door, because my brain is maintaining a constancy of perception despite some obvious changes as projected on the retina. It is very important that we keep this in mind, because if you don't maintain a perception of the constants, then you will be deceived by every change in the world. You know, someone says, the French have a statement that goes, the more things change, the more they remain the same. You know, and often many things change so that they can remain the same. And often we have been deceived by the changes that have happened, let us say, in this country. We look at slavery time, we look at Reconstruction, and we break history up into these various parts. And often we compare what opportunities we have available to us today against when we were in slavery and against when we were segregated and against it. And it looks like we've come through tremendous changes. And we get the idea that the world has changed drastically. And of course, this feeds into the mythology of progress. That if it's changed this much since that time, it's got to get better further on down the road. But then you must recognize that there are certain constants that are still behind these apparent changes. And I'll mention some of the constants here. There could be others, of course, you can come through. When you talk about the European, you must recognize the European is only about 10% of the world's population. And that's a very important concept to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen. It sounds like a coincidental statement, but it's one that's important because a great deal of European psychology and orientation to the world is based on their minority status. We as Africans and people of African descent are a part of the world's larger majorities, not minorities. The European is a small group of people. It is a minority group of people. And that minority, its minority status has shaped its psychology and its orientation to the world, both consciously and unconsciously. And often then, for this minority to maintain its control over the world, it must, of necessity, maintain an enormous military power. And this is one of the constants that it's going to seek to maintain no matter how many white boys and girls you hold hands with. No matter how many white people you sleep with and marry and all of this kind of stuff, this is a constant. Military power. An overwhelming military power. As a matter of fact, it was a part of that military power that has you here today. And you can see today the greatest problem in this country and in Russia and in other European countries involves money spent for military outlays, a vast consumption of the country's wealth and resources goes into military resources. And despite the fact that you tell these people you have enough weapons now to kill each individual 700 times over, they still rob everybody to build up this military power. Because they recognize, being such a small group, that the only real advantage they have over these other large majorities is an overwhelming military presence. And now you can go to all of these schools and everywhere you want to go, but that's a constant. And that constant has been there since you first met the white man, and as a matter of fact, it has not been diminished since. And the intention is that it will always be that way. Even when you join the military, you'll still be a part of that whole set situation. It'll be set here. That's one of the constants that maintains that. The other constant, of course, is economic power. Maintaining economic control of the world. That control was being established when we first met this man in Africa. It has grown since that time, and it is still maintaining itself at this time. You can get as many jobs as you want to on Wall Street. You can work for IBM. You can work for all the rest. But the constant is that they're going to still be owned by Europeans. That they're going to still be controlled by Europeans. And that ownership and control is going to be used to manipulate the psychology of non-European people, to maintain the subordination and servitude of European people. You think now because you have a choice, you can choose computer engineering, and you can choose this and that somehow you have it over your great-grandfathers who were slaves? Let's look at that concept. Of course, not every black slave was a field hand. We had roles there too. Not every black slave was a house servant. You had carpenters, you had skilled craftsmen, you had people who were up to date, and I'm speaking of slaves now, in terms of crafts and skills, who worked in mills and factories and all of the other kinds of things. And yet, the ultimate thing was they worked for the benefit of their masters. They turned their profits over to their masters. That relationship has not changed one whit. The idea that because you got a degree in computer engineering or whatever you may call it, that you somehow have changed from your great-grandparent who might have been an iron worker and a steel one, that this has changed is only an illusion. Because as your great-grandparents worked to enrich his master, so when you get out of this school, you're going to work to enrich your own masters. Oh, they're not going to hold a whip over you. They're not going to, be as brutal perhaps, but the same essential relationship is going to be there. And therefore, it is the intention. As a matter of fact, the integration of our people into these jobs is still being done to maintain a grip on the economic system. So what do you do? As I often tell my students, you are being educated to put a black face on a white power. I was reading something the other day. We were talking about conditioning. And in my psych class the other day, and how you use conditioning to manipulate desires and so forth in people, and to try to induce people to buy various items. And of course, it talked about the Coke campaign, how Coke would start off its campaign with Bill Cosby's show, how it would be identified with intimate groups and so forth, associations, how Michael Jackson, I believe, would be used as such, how Michael Jordan, the basketball player, would be used and shown drinking Coke and so forth, and how a black advertising agency would be hired to project this image to black people. It had Fernando Valenzuela for the Hispanics. It had reggae music for the Caribbean, about very cherry Coke. Someone told me that cherry in the Caribbean also has to do with being high, doesn't it? Someone ever heard that? So Coke is very cherry. And yet you see here then an association of a product with people's culture and with their backgrounds and with their values as a way of manipulating the mind, manipulating their desires and creating desires in them and increasing their consumption and using then black agencies and Hispanic agencies and Asian agencies and hiring black vice presidents. And you know, it always amuses me when you read about the vice presidents of large corporations and you always get to this black person who's the vice president of special markets. Of course, you know, he is the black man on staff whose special job it is to show these people how black needs and moods can be manipulated to earn greater money for the white company. So in the end, while you may point out that now you have black vice presidents, you have black advertising agencies, and how far we've come, when you get down to the very bottom dollar, it is still the old game of extracting resources and money and everything else out of black people and using them to enrich the economic power and resources of Europeans. And of course, the Europeans found out that it works better when you put a black face in the position to do this. So ultimately, he maintains his economic control by projecting and educating black people to do it. It's the same old game as neocolonialism. I don't think there's no coincidence that you have neocolonialism occurring pretty much in parallel to so-called integrationism or assimilationism in America. The same kind of game is going on, putting black faces on white power, because when you look under that black face, you'll still see economic control and economic manipulation being taking place. I was looking the other day, sometime back, I was reading in the New York Times about how many scholarships were available to black South Africans. In fact, there was more money available to black South Africans than there were black South Africans to take the money. And you say, well, now why is this? I mean, they're looking for them. Well, why wasn't this money available 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 30 years ago? Why isn't it being available now? Of course, the obvious situation is here that where the Europeans see that they will lose political power in South Africa, what they want to do, of course, is educate its next leadership generation. And of course, knowing how we eat up white degrees, when these people go and get these degrees out of these Eurocentric institutions, we're going to respect them so highly, we're going to put them right into office, and they're going to bring their educated values and orientations right with them and help to maintain and repress the group in the interest of their European tutors and mentors. So now the money is being available. If you read colonial history, you'll see often as the Europeans turn to loose the so-called colonies, they establish schools and institutions so that they can educate the leadership class, and of course we can see what kind of problems that is involved. And a similar game goes on within this particular culture. By the way, you say, well, you know, we have to play that kind of game. I have to play that kind of game and eat, I'm going to do it. But there's no assurance that you're even going to eat. If you had read last month, in fact, still this month, Black Enterprise magazine, you would have seen the lead piece in that magazine dealing with, what is it, how to survive, it's something like, how do you survive the cutbacks in industry? And there's a whole article on there advising like how you get severance pay from these companies as they cut back. As a matter of fact, Gray says in that piece that a 500,000 middle management jobs have been knocked out since the early 80s, ladies and gentlemen. That there is a severe cutback. He's now, and he's speaking very clearly in terms of his own class interest. He says the black corporate class, whatever kind of class that is, is strictly endangered. Then he goes on to say that also means danger for the black people as a race. But of course, he deals with this class first. And so what he's concerned with is, he goes on to say further in that article that they're concerned whether there will be any black who's going to head a Fortune 500 company by the year 2000. And he mentions the idea that there are actually fewer black college graduates today than some years back. And the problem, he says, is how are we going to protect the interests of these black college graduates when the ones that are currently in the industry are now on their way out, and so there'll be no one there to help pull them in at all. And so the idea that the degree is going to assure you some kind of job is very, very questionable, period. because there's a shrinking in terms of American economic might and the growth of the American economy. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, as I often said, civil rights laws, affirmative action laws, are no guarantee at all for you getting any kind of job. Too many of us have been raised to think that laws will protect our interests. Laws are not going to protect your interests one whit. Laws can only protect, and laws don't protect anything, as a matter of fact. It's people who protect interests. And the day that the establishment decides that it is not going to enforce the law, then the law is of no account. We saw that in Reconstruction. When Washington decided that it would no longer support the Reconstruction laws and so forth, then the whole thing collapsed. It took 100 years to get over that, to get back halfway where we were during Reconstruction. We look at the Reagan administration today. It just decides that it is not going to enforce the rules. The rules are on the books. But when it decides to send out a signal that it's not going to enforce the rules, then nothing happens. And believe this, ladies and gentlemen, if it ever gets to a point where there's a choice between the European feeding his child and feeding yours, no law in the world is going to make this man feed your child first. None whatsoever. So the ultimate thing is you cannot have faith in laws and things of this nature. You ultimately have to have power, real power. And to a good extent, you see, education ultimately has to be about that. Preparing a people and setting a people up to have real power so that they can protect their biological and other interests in times of stress. You see? And if, as I said earlier, if he doesn't do that, then it is not a sound education. I don't care how well you speak, what college you went to, who taught you as professors. If it doesn't add up ultimately to the protection of your interests, then it is not ultimately a sound education.
History is the present, and history is the future. In European systems, we have a linear approach to the world, an approach that makes one believe that history is something that is left behind. History is something that can be forgotten. No, ladies and gentlemen, history is never left behind. In the human mind, the history is now. And in the human mind, the history is present. For the future is made of things that were made in the past. Without past, there is no future. And so we must then see. So the Afrocentric view of the world is nonlinear. It is one that sees past, present, and future as simultaneous. And we must recognize this factor. Our knowledge of our history and our perception of our history is intimately tied up with our knowledge of our future and our ability to determine that future. To forget history and not to operate on history is not to control the future. Therefore, we will see then those who wish to control the African mind seek to control our perception of the future. The mind then is not only influenced by its inputs, but of course it's influenced by its own native characteristics. It uses the sum of its currently available intellectual, emotional, and behavioral characteristics, and it brings those characteristics to bear on its environment and to affect its adaptation. It uses then its own potential powers. The control of the mind and related personality, their characteristic functioning and relationships to the world and self-perception is significantly achieved through the manipulation and the quantity and quality of inputs, through the structuring of its environment, through the manipulation of reinforcements and experience, and the control of its perceptions and interpretation of these perceptions, and finally through the feedback from its output. Let us make it simple. I only mean this, then, that the mind essentially is controlled by the nature and quality, by the quantity of information that flows into it. It is also controlled by its native characteristics, by its thinking characteristics, by its reasoning characteristics, by its current mood state, by its current perception of itself and of the individuals, by its current perception of the environment. And it is also controlled by its expression, by its output. That is, when we express something and when we act upon the world, we look at the effects of our acting upon the world. How the world reacts to our action reflects back on our mind, and our mind is often changed and biased as a result of what we call the feedback mechanism. So then this gives us the basic insight then into how one controls the mind. You can manipulate the mind then in terms of manipulating the information that goes in it. And this is another one of the European constants I often talk about that is hidden behind what is apparent change, and that is the European control of information, which I'm sure you as an audience are very familiar with. We are still fighting to get the videotapes of the court scene on like it is, or on TV, period. You're still fighting to get other information that you have in the Tawana Brawley struggles and other struggles on the public television. The Europeans, of course, are manipulating that information. Despite your election of mayors, despite your elections of governors, and so forth, the European still intends to control the nature of information that is available to the African mind. And since this mind operates on the basis of information fed through it, then the control of information by Europeans is an attempt to control the nature of the African mind. I was very happy at the time when the City Sun made a major coup in terms of the Tawana Brawley case. That was a monumental event, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you recognize the great historical value of that situation. For the first time, a black newspaper, I may not say the first time, but at least the first time in current history, a black newspaper threatened to become an authority within itself. And African people began to look at a source of information created by themselves as the source of authority and not a European instrument. Because it becomes very, very dangerous to the status quo when we begin to listen and follow our own authority and our own sources of information. And you can see then the New York Times as it attempted to take back the authority that it had lost to the City Sun through either the ignoring of that information or by this 2 or 3 page spread that it made concerning the so-called grand jury findings. But it had been wounded, and we must continue to wound it until it is ultimately destroyed. Information is controlled, and I often talk to college students about this. One of the constants that still remains with us and that is intended to remain is what I call the control of the domain of discourse. What does it mean? It only means the control of what it is that is important to talk about. the determination of what is worth talking about, what is worth learning. The European seeks then to control this domain of discourse. What is muse? You know, the New York Times then sees itself as what, the paper record and this and that, which means in a way that it is not news until the New York Times says it's news. It is not news unless it occurs on the major network. Anything that doesn't occur on the major networks that does not make the Eurocentric papers then is not considered news. It is not considered worthy of learning. We see this in college catalogs. I said often many of our students go to college, they look in the catalog, they see the listing of courses, and they assume then that the courses listed there must be worth knowing. If they are not worth knowing and studying, then they wouldn't be in the catalog. Of course, the adverse reasoning is, if it's not in the catalog, then it must be what? Not worth knowing. Is it no coincidence then that the things that are most pertinent to our advancement and liberation as a people is left out of the college catalog, is left out of the news, which then subtly creates in our minds that news that is important to us, news that is relative to us, is unimportant and not worth knowing. So the very design of the catalog, the very news stories that appear in the paper, the very news stories that are projected on the television set, create a value system in and of themselves. And the very fact then that certain things are called news and other things are not, then biases information and ultimately biases the very nature of our minds. And ultimately, it biases the very characteristics and capacities and abilities of our minds to operate on that information and future information. The mind also then has some, I wouldn't say innate characteristics, but at least innate potentialities. Those potentialities such as reasoning, logical thinking, critical analysis, comparisons, contrasting, evaluative stuff, these kinds of things, calculating, weighing, measuring, looking at cause and effects, looking at relations, abstracting. Those characteristics are the very operation the mind uses to operate on the world itself, to operate on information, to transform information, to synthesize information, to store information, to compare information, to use information that is ultimately projected in behavior and ultimately projected on the environment. A mind then that cannot look at implications and develop implications, a mind then that cannot perform simple syllogistic reasoning, a mind that cannot perform comparisons, a mind that cannot contrast, a mind that cannot calculate, weigh, and measure, a mind that cannot determine causes and effects, a mind that cannot determine relationships, a mind that cannot perform organization, a mind that cannot perform planning, a mind that cannot evaluate its effect upon the world, is a mind then that has no real influence upon the world and is a mind that has lost control of itself and is a mind that cannot protect the interests of the personality and the person in which it is a part. This type of mind, this type of structuring is the result to a good extent of the nature of the inputs of the mind. And is the nature then, as I said earlier, of the kind of conditions under which the mind operates and lives and exists. One of the reasons then our children have problems often in their thinking skills and reasoning skills. As a side here, I'll say for a moment that we as people can only be in the condition we are in as a result of being robbed of our common sense, as a result of being robbed of our thinking skills, as a result of being emotional and not reasonable, so that our behavior can come under the control of reason and logic, under the control of critical analysis of possibilities and probabilities. It is necessary for the European, in order to control the African mind, to emotionalize that mind. And if you'll note the ads on TV and radio and the other propaganda appeals to which we are subjugated time in and time out, are designed to speak directly to the emotions, not to the rationality of the individual. You can only hypnotize an individual once you get around his critical analytical thinking. And the African then is often emotionalized as a prelude to his behavioral manipulation. So then, it is no accident that our children are placed within certain schools. Or as I said earlier, that we are forced to live under certain psychological and physiological circumstances. For it is supposedly in the schools and in the institutions that these inherent characteristics and potentialities of the mind are developed. It is supposedly in the schools that thinking skills and reasoning skills and comparative skills and implicative skills and other skills are trained and developed in the mind, so that the mind then can operate autonomously and independently in the world and bring then the world under its will and under its subjugation and protect the individual in the environment and, if necessary, from the environment. But a thinking black man and woman is a dangerous black man and woman. I have to tell you again and again that all of the institutions of the society, I don't care whether you're talking about the family institution, the so-called criminal justice institution, the so-called religious institution, the health institutions, the educational institutions, the economic institutions, all of them have one thing in common, and that is maintaining European domination. And I have said often, and I will say again, that is the reason why when you meet those institutions, they will operate in relationship to you in a way that is the very opposite of what their name implies. And I've said again and again that the church will often send you to hell, that the economic system will keep you poor, that the health system will keep you sick, that the justice system will mete out injustice. How else can it maintain the European in power if the institutions don't do it? And I'm